you go down to Antarctica. It was a trip down there. Actually, they took tourists just to the edge of Antarctica, but they said when you looked over into the water once in a while, you know, like you would see a plastic bottle float by or something. And that's like, you know, far, far away from civilization. So they, I don't know. We'll see. Back to you, Roy, WS.
Hey, Pete, yeah, plastic is all over the place. Eventually, hopefully, some number of organisms will evolve to digest all the plastic we're leaving the world, and that's probably the best way that they'll be rid of it. But until then, we'll have to wait and deal with that. Ocean's very, very important. Ocean is where we get most of our breathing oxygen. I know people talk about planting a tree. It's kind of problematic whether planting a tree will trap that much carbon and produce that much oxygen, but the oceans do produce massive quantities of oxygen and is the majority of the source of the fuel that we use to breathe. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS, and going back to Wesley's earlier comment, I heard you, Wesley, you wanted my opinion, humble man that I am, of, well, you already did Elon, so let's put Elon over to the side. Tesla. We've had discussions in the past about Tesla, and I know you have a soft spot in your heart for him, and I have a bobblehead Nikola in the shack, I respect him. He was a genius, but an erratic genius. And an erratic genius that kind of went over the cliff in his later life, evidenced by a reporter asking him things, and he told the reporter that his wife is a pigeon that lives outside his window. Which hotel? He was living in a hotel. Very much like Howard Hughes. He ended in a hotel. So, the things that kind of annoyed me. He didn't believe, didn't agree at all with Albert Einstein's special relativity. He believed that he would be producing a particle that traveled faster than the speed of light, which I think he said he was going to call a Teslatron or something. It was actually most likely I'm blanking on what it really was. It's in the electron family, but they're very, very weak. So it'll come to me eventually. But they travel at the speed of light. Well, slightly below the speed of light. So I think it was a genius that went crazy towards the end. I think he had an incredible number of good ideas and a couple of really bad ideas. I don't think he was a good businessman, unfortunately, and everyone kind of stole him blind. In this life, you have to be either a good businessman or a good businessman and a good scientist. A good businessman. He was a good scientist, rather. Let me drop for a second. People took advantage of him, and the squirrelier he got, the more they did that, unfortunately. Thomas Edison, I think everyone remembers, most people our age remember the biography movie, which made him much better than he was. He was a man, like anyone else. He probably had a severe case of insomnia, so he didn't sleep that much, so he stayed up and worked real hard to make a lot of money. He did not invent the things that most people think he invented. If you talk to the average person who even knows Thomas Edison, they will say that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. Well, number one, he didn't. Number two, he didn't perfect the light bulb. He owned a research lab that housed a lot of very clever technicians who made a better light bulb. But he was able to get a lot of notoriety and a lot of fame and promote himself. That's another thing that Elon is capable of, self-promotion. And he self-promoted Thomas Edison's labs and Edison Company and tried to push DC power generation. Famous battle between Tesla and Edison was between Thomas Edison had a big investment in, and AC, which Tesla had a love for. Regularly, Thomas Edison, let me drop for a sec. Okay. Regularly, Thomas Edison would travel around with things like elephants and electrocute them to show people that alternating currents could be very dangerous. Again, he was a showman. Again, the same way that Elon Musk is a showman. Elon Musk was promoting a robotic company. Instead of showing a robot last year, he dressed a dancer in a Lycra bodysuit that looked vaguely robotic and had it dance around the stage. So it's sizzle, not the space. So, you know, in some ways, Edison is close to Elon Musk, but I give, you know, basically, Elon Musk's only major invention was a video game he made when he was a teenager, which was a ripoff of another video game. So I give Edison more credit as a proper engineer. But most of his energy was in managing other engineers.
Interesting, yeah? Very interesting. I was interested with something being called Spoil Boy. When I'm leaving my house, I have that neighbor that is giving me the die. A guy in the tie and the cheek every day. And he is now. is the effect of spoilness being seen for most of the people who are self-made? So we take a Trump when he was a young boy with $1 million from his father, and then Trump suffering narcissism, let me drop. And we have Elon Musk starting from nothing and making himself an incredibly, incredibly powerful person whose words can change politics too. And then Thomas Edison. I agree with you. Thomas Edison is, if you look at him from perspective, what you did? Okay, light bulb. What else? I don't know. Some motors, DC motors, right? Now, let's take a look at a favorite by me, Nikola Tesla. The beauty I really respect. He was not perfect. Never got married, never had children, nothing wrong, that's his choice. And what he made, Niagara Falls, is the result. Motors and generators, superconducting electric transmission lines, X-ray diagnostic, high tension induction coil transformer, high voltage capacitors, high speed switches, the radio frequency electrical power supply, the high frequency fluorescent lighting, the high frequency incandescent lighting, the radio and TV broadcasting, the wireless communication, the radio frequency detectors, the crystal control electrical oscillator, the heterodyne radio receiver, stroboscopy, radio control and robotics, space spectrum and signal processing, the electronic logical gate, and pumps and turbines.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Okay, I would prefer if you kind of slow that down so I could make a comment every so often. I'll just give you just one example where that's a little bit of hyperbole. To say that Nikola Tesla began the concept of superconducting transmission lines is not really true. What he did was he suggested cooling non-superconducting material so that its resistance would lower in order to decrease the amount of resistance loss in transmission lines. That's a significant difference than the concept that sounds real better of superconducting. He had no method whatsoever of utilizing superconductors. I don't even know remember when superconducting material was first discovered. When it was first discovered, it was very difficult to maintain those temperatures at any price. And if you were able to accomplish it, it defeats the purpose of saving the loss of the transmission line losses and such. So that's just one of the things where that's really not what he invented. It's vaguely similar, but vaguely similar is not the same thing as identical. Yes, Ed.
I have to agree partly with Wesley. I think winning Tesla a little much credit, but here's my point. Tesla did two things that put him up there with among the best demonstrators. One, power distribution allowing high voltage transmission lines while long to power. Edison's DC system, limited in range because it could not use step up and step down transformers like Tesla's AC system. And two, three phase power. World runs on three phase power, and the polyphase induction motor is one of the most elegant designs I've ever seen. So I'm saying, I think Tesla deserves a humongous amount of credit for those two alone. The others, some yes, some more so, some less so. Back to Roy.
Okay, I'll give you all those and then a whole bunch of others that Wesley, because some of those that Wesley said are completely accurate and true. As far as the heterodyning, I wouldn't give him the credit. My understanding was heterodyning and superheterodyning were good old Edwin Armstrong. So that's another little thing. But again, he was a brilliant man. I am not saying he was charlatan in the slightest. He's not P.T. Barnum. You know, he's legitimate. But he was erratic. And there's a lot of material that he wrote down which did not kind of make any kind of sense, you know, including being engaged to a pigeon. But, you know, we'll put all that aside. But, you know, the super luminal particle he was going to call a Tesla particle was a neutrino. Came to me finally. We're all human beings, and even brilliant men are human beings. They have limitations. I met one time Linus Pauling, brilliant chemist, Nobel Prize winner, did stupid things, pushed vitamin C beyond any kind of normal rational belief system. Our heroes, unfortunately, if you look too closely, they have feet of clay.
Roy, one more comment.
Certainly, Ed.
This is just my own personal theory. Certain thresholds, when people become too smart, when they force the brilliance threshold, they start to become weak.
Okay, you've mentioned that in the past, and you've included me in that equation and say that, you know, somehow I'm hiding it or something. I don't know. It's possible. There are very brilliant people who kind of slowly uncoil and just, you know, mathematicians particularly have that unfortunate tendency. They seem to go a little wacky and such. Even Newton. Newton had a period of time that historians sort of think that maybe he was playing too much with alchemy and developed mercury poisoning, which can cause transient insanity. In the case of Linus Pauling, I don't think they, quote, went crazy. I think there's a problem. If you win a Nobel Prize, it's very highly esteemed, but then you're surprisingly stuck in the situation of what are you going to do next? And you really want to do something next. You don't want to have peak in the past. You want to peak in the present. And so there's more than a few very brilliant Nobel winners who have gone on to promote stupid ideas, I think, for the reason that they just want to have a chance of reclaiming the fame that they had when they were a few years younger.
W.S. 2-1.
Yes, Paul.
I just missed what Ed said. Smart people become what? What did he say? That I lost. Thank you.
Yes, I'll just kind of say it also in case you're, because your signal's a little weak, maybe Paul couldn't pick it up. But basically, Ed said they kind of go crazy after a while. But say it is back in your own words, Ed.
Say, if you were to raise people on the level of brilliance, I find there's a certain threshold. When their brilliance level goes above that threshold, most of them become kind of nuts.
Okay, very good. I got that sentence. Thanks, Ed.
Okay, I mean, it's very problematic. In addition to guys who are Nobel Prize winners, who kind of go around the book, you know, go a little bit strange, even regular professors in colleges, if you kind of look at weird theories that are unproven and highly unlikely, they seem to cluster not in 30-year-old PhDs, but in people who have retired a few years. They're in their late 60s, mid-70s or so, and these ideas generally make no sense. And again, they kind of use their previous position as having earned a PhD, having done research for a big company or something, and in their retirement years, they kind of act out. So again, I think it's a tendency, the idea being that, you know, this is the last go-around, you might as well grab for the ring, and if you miss it, you miss it, but you might as well grab for it. So a lot of squirrely ideas out there, especially retired physics professors. Engineers, yeah, tend to be the category I heard that produces the biggest number of letters to physics, major physics university departments of kind of unusual theories of how the universe works.
Well, how does the universe work?
Well, you'd be sort of surprised with some of these people's ideas. I mean, there's a lot of really weird ideas. It's called the electric universe, where these people apparently do not seem to believe that gravity works, that gravity exists, that all that we perceive as gravity is an electromagnetic principle, and that sparks of electricity kind of jump from planet to planet, keeping them in place. It goes on and on. It's been a theory since the 50s. People have written numerous books on this weird theory.
I have my own theory.
Okay, give it a go. I mean, Dick had an interesting one. It was based on the instability of a black hole, that if a black hole was big enough, it wouldn't be stable and dissipate according to Hawking's radiation dissipation, but they explode in a big bang, and that was his theory of how the universe works. But what's yours?
W2BZ.
Yes, nice, but Ed wanted to say something. So first Ed, and then we'll get back to you, Rich, okay?
All right. About 20 years ago, this idea, I was waiting for it to be shrunk when it was exact opposite happened. For a period there, it appeared that the Big Bang, the universe was expanding, and it would be slowing down and eventually lost the track again, and it would eventually come to the Big Crunch. By the way, this is not by a long shot. And then it would, like, blow through each other, come out the other side with a whole new Big Bang. And I liked that one because of the continuity that the universe oscillates, didn't just appear out of nowhere and dissipate to nothing. 20 years ago, they said, yeah, it appeared out of nowhere and dissipate to nothing, and I've been upset at some minor level about that ever since.
Okay, so those are simplifications, though. So I assume you have further, let me just check that I have the repeater.
I don't know. Simple answer is no. I have not given it that much thought. I have not given any analysis. It's just a gut feeling.
Okay. You know, you're perfectly, you can have a gut feeling. There's no proof one way or the other for all kinds of aspects. I also like the symmetry of the Big Bang, the Big Crunch, Big Bang, Big Crunch, Big Bang, Big Crunch. You have a problem ultimately with infinite regression, because although it kind of gets away with the problem that you perceived as we came from nothing, which is not exactly what physicists say, you have to go back and, if you keep going back far enough, you kind of suck, because you would think that there had to be something that started it. I guess you could just kind of be philosophical and say it's always been bang crunch. But that's kind of, to me it's an unrewarding thing. I love the idea, because then you can kind of make up all kinds of situations. It's possible that in each cycle the same exact events happen. So there's us talking together, it's 20 billion years ago in the previous crunch bang, and there's another one pair of us talking in the future crunch bang. The problem with that is the expansion of the universe is not slowing down. It's speeding up. So unless there's something else going on that causes it to slow down later on, we're kind of stuck with a runaway universe. Say again, Ed. I couldn't make that out.
I was so looking forward to seeing the first crunch. The fact that it wouldn't be for billions of years, and I don't think I'll live that long, just is not into that calculation.
Yeah, philosophically, I prefer the big crunch to the death, because it has death in the term. But we can't choose our ends, apparently.
Bridges waiting.
Yeah, I just wanted Ed to have his chance for him to make his comment. Rich, what's your comment?
This phenomenon about what are you going to do next, for an encore, is nowhere better seen than in Hollywood, where they call winning an Academy Award the kiss of death. So I guess it's the pressure that people and industries put on themselves to equal what you've done, or better what you've done. And I guess that pressure causes all sorts of mistakes and, underpar next moves than the thing that you won for. But Hollywood is known for the kiss of death. Think if you won the Academy Award, you'd get the best scripts, you'd have your cake and eat it too. But not the case at all. Academy Award winners usually take a pretty big hit after they've won.
Another one in that category, Buzz Aldrin.
Care to expound upon that? I mean, he's kind of a quirky guy at this point.
Buzz Aldrin, as everybody knows, was, part of the first team to walk on the moon. I've read his autobiography, and he said after he came back, it was like, said to himself, I've walked on the moon. How in the name of God can I ever top that? And he entered a years-long depression over it. He finally dug his way out of it, but he lost some years.
That's a shame, but it's very human. That's the kind of the way that we're wired, You think to yourself, he's falling back to talk about billionaires, when you have $100 billion, what exactly is the motivation to double that? What can you buy with $2 billion that you can't buy with $1 billion, unless, of course, you want to buy a social network company? And I think it's part of the same thing. It's ego. What have you done for me lately? internalized. And it's unfortunate and sad. You know, there's only so many great things that even the greatest people could do. I mean, the one thing that Alexander the Great figured out, he never had a decline because he died when he was 32 years old. But that doesn't seem to be a good solution to that problem, at least in my mind.
This is why when there were no more worlds to conquer?
Yes, that's the line. But I'm sure, actually, if he lived longer, he would probably wreak havoc on the rest of India. So there was still land out there, and who knows, maybe he would be the emperor of China.
Let me go with a few more things.
Okay, Wesley.
Yeah, I already have a quick things I would like to touch. Not for long, not bored the audience. I was born with what? In what? With what? But then the DB system decided to take over, and someone is reading the manual for the antenna. It says minus 70 dB. What the heck is that? So some things are measured in decibels, and for instance, gain, and it's often specified in decibels. And some people are quite confused. So the GPS satellite operated frequency 1.575 gigahertz, and how much power it is received. So you could say a few words about it.
What? Well, you're in good company, Ed, because I don't either. You want a discussion of how decibels work? I'm not quite sure what, because you mentioned decibels, and then all of a sudden you're mentioning GPS. Decibels inherently is just a power ratio. You know, there are dBm's that are milliwatts, but pure dM is just a ratio. Usually powers, but people misuse them. They're 10 times Laws-Based 10. A dB of minus 70 is 10 to the minus 7 or 1 billion. But I'm not quite sure if that's the question.
Well, I just had a question from one guy, a friend of mine. He says, what is it? He's 60, right? Why don't they tell you how much power is transmitted in what, or the gain of an antenna in regular linear units? So that was kind of entertainment that I was asking for. And to
appreciate.
Okay,
and I would like to hear your thoughts. I mean, generally speaking, keep logarithmic terms to kind of shrink the range of things. So that when we talk about power, we could be talking microwatts, we could talk milliwatts, we could talk watts, we could talk kilowatts, we could talk megawatts. Whereas if you do it in dBm, it's a little bit more manageable and it stays in dBm. But Ed, please, feel free.
There are separate issues. First is why the things lend themselves to dB, and secondly, let's put the cart before the horse. As you said, Roy, Dewey is doing stuff in dB, cover a tremendous range with relatively small numbers. I mean, a minus 100 dB signal is very common, received level for ham radio work. Try doing that, 0.00000000, that's 1 watt. It becomes ridiculous, where dB is a much more clear tool. But the root of this starts with something. Boy, I am going to ask an absurd question. It is stupid, but I promise it is germane and relevant. I want you to answer this, Roy, or anybody else can jump in. I know what God's favorite number is. You know what God's favorite number is, Roy?
No, I do not. I know my favorite number. My favorite number is Euler's number.
it raised a question, how do you know about that number? It means unless it's an abbreviation of something else.
John's favorite number is not an integer, 2.718281828. And the reason is that is what is known as e, the base of natural logarithms. The further you go into science, everything is exponential based on 2.718281828. The reason I am claiming to read God's mind is because everything he tells uses it. Right?
Okay, would you like to tell the audience another term for E?
I'm not sure, but I think when you referred to Euler's constant, I think that's what you're talking about, but I wasn't sure, so I decided to hold off.
Yeah, it's apparently it's pronounced Euler, and that's the way the guy pronounced his own name. But yeah, it's Euler's constant. It's what I mentioned at the beginning. So I think I'm fortunate, if you're correct, to have the same affection for Euler's constant that God does. It is a very, very useful. Pi comes in a distant second to me. They're both, by the way, transcendental numbers.
Yes, by the way, I said that knowingly. I know it's pronounced Euler, but when I say Euler, everybody starts, I'm thinking of some guy with a can of oil. So I purposely mispronounced it Euler, which is, well, it could be pronounced Euler, and it's anti-unique. No one else has that name, so see where I'm coming from. But yeah, Euler or Euler's equation, e to the I theta equals cosine theta plus I sine theta, links sinusoids and exponentials. Now you get into pi. So the whole thing is one closed loop.
Yeah, and in addition, you get into imaginary numbers. I was talking on the phone the other day about how imaginary numbers was begun by mathematicians as a purely theoretical concept, and got taken into electrical engineering, and is the very basis of many aspects of electrical engineering, require the use of complex numbers.
You know, AC power made that one easy, shall I explain?
Sure.
If you have a complex load, like a motor, where the current waveform does not line up with the voltage waveform, you have a bear of a time explaining it, and imaginary numbers come in very, very, very handy.
Yes, I agree. But once again, science tends to pick really not so great names for things. People have had a lot of problems with complex numbers because of the choice of terms of an imaginary number. To most people, an imaginary number should be imaginary, which it's really not. It's another example of science and technology not being terribly creative with their word choices.
Never mind.
You go for the
TV scientists have a problem with the name Euler. They don't know if you're talking about a German mathematician of a couple hundred years ago or a large ocean-going ship.
Okay, let me see if I have it. Okay, I have it. Yeah, I understand. Look, I mean, it's potato, potato. You know, there was a time where I called a Fresnel lens a Fresnel lens. You know, there are still words that I mispronounce because theoretically there's two ways of looking at names for things. The case is for some strict people, you name it after the pronunciation of the person who the name came from. There are others who say, well, I live in America, I don't speak with an accent, I say the words like most Americans say. So you can make a case for either way. So, you know, Euler, Euler, it's still a beautiful number. It's still my favorite number. It's kind of one of those things that the name of this class is transcendental. And, you know, to a degree, it goes even beyond just the simple mathematical term. It seems to me to be almost a transcendental number. It has such an effect, profound effect on physics.
Let me go for it.
Okay, Wesley, yeah, jump in.
Yeah, for some comment. Antenna engineers or engineers actually don't like the use of linear units when the quantities can vary by large amount. So in real picture, in a head, we could say the difference between linear 17 and linear 18 and to work around this, we use the decibel system. So in simple logarithmic transformation units, a linear system is easily converted by P in dB equals 10 to log 10 times P. So, but anyhow, not going to much to the equations, the Azure DB is 1, and the logarithmic linear 10 would be minus 100 dB. Anyhow, let me go further. A antenna. There was an antenna offered by Gigaport, and I sent to Dr. Roy the video where they have a mast. This telescopic antenna made from fiberglass, not the fiberglass. It's a carbon fiber. Actually, you can distinguish the difference between carbon fiber and fiberglass. Carbon fiber is, if I remember, 3 ohms per square foot. Not sure. Anyhow, the material. We may say what is the best material of the antenna. Since this antenna can be 30 feet or 50 feet, if it's carbon fiber, it's only a few pounds. Unbelievable. And it's really strong. And you can have it. You can buy it. It's quite pricey, about $750 for 30 foot antenna. But then the question that properties of conductors when we talk about antenna materials and efficiency. And then there would be another values, which is antenna radiation efficiency and ohmic resistance versus radiation resistance. And then we may talk about permeability when we talk about materials with high permeability, such as iron, steel, nickel, which results reduced antenna size. Dr. Roy.
AC2GX, I'm a lot confused. As far as I saw, that was a carbon fiber mast, not a carbon fiber antenna. A carbon fiber is not very conductive. It is more conductive than an insulating material. It is less conductive than most metals. It's considered a metalloid. You can dope it with things. You can increase or decrease its conductivity. In the case of industrial carbon fiber, it is my understanding that different orientations of carbon fiber are combined together in a matrix of insulating epoxy, so that most carbon fiber tripods and masts and other implements are not particularly conductive because they're embedded in a kind of insulating epoxy resin. That's my understanding of carbon fiber. Again, not really aware of anyone who sells, because if you have a carbon rod, it has a degree of conductivity, again, not quite as good as aluminum or copper, but it's not physically strong. You have to turn them into small fibers and then shift layers into different axes in order to get strength in different directions and then embed it in another material entirely. Yes, Ed.
Why you, Roy? I don't really see a point of having carbon fiber as basically has very similar electrical characteristics to a piece of carbon. I'm not sure. I mean, resistors can be made of carbon. I mean, most resistors are carbon. You know, some are wire wound, but most are carbon. And carbon fiber has about the same electrical properties. Julie is a strength. That's the reason I threw on my ball. I want to say something. But in the last year, I've become a convert to something, and in one very, very, very narrow area, I've become a tremendous fan of carbon fiber. A lot of hikers and backpackers have become great fans of what are known as trekking poles. They're very much like the skiers, ski poles. But they're meant for improved balance when you're hiking on rocky, steep terrain. And when they came out with carbon fiber trekking poles, last year I've become a tremendous fan of them. I've decided what carbon fiber trekking poles is allow you to become a four-legged creature when you want to. But they give your hand, you know, the characteristics that like a horse would have with four legs, that you improve your balance by when you're trying to walk from rock to rock across the stream. And the carbon fiber is better than any other material I've ever seen for that purpose. So that's one place where carbon fiber really excels, but of course its electrical properties are completely irrelevant there.
Okay, thank you very much, Ed. Yeah, I have a carbon fiber camera tripod. The beauty of carbon fiber, if it's done correctly, you have to know where the stresses will most on any kind of structural design, and arrange the weaves in an orientation that fights against that. But well engineered, they tend to be sturdier, more rigid, and lighter than even things like steel. So as a material, although you pay a little extra, I understand the Chinese have gotten good at making carbon fiber these days, so the prices will probably continue to creep down. It's a very interesting material for structure, for support measures, which is, I think, what that YouTube was showing, that he had a carbon fiber mast, and he was going to mount an antenna wire on that carbon fiber mast. But I don't think he was going to use the mast as an antenna because, again, carbon's not that great as a conductor. You could dope it, but there's no real benefit in it. You need to have it as a top-speed fibers with cross-pattern to give it its structural quality. You know, that kind of takes it out of really an antenna.
Yeah, interesting. So the low conductivity, but the still conductivity disqualifies the carbon for the use of an antenna unless it's treated with some metals or some other adequate material. And there was a quote, latex, I don't know how to pronounce that, and I was surprised. The quote was that, to increase the conductivity of carbon fiber, we can use latex or latex. But then when I'm reading latex wire in your conductivity, though, through the liquid, so that. Where we have a connection with latex, but silica film for electronic conductivity through solid. And then I was kind of puzzled what latex as an isolator has to do with increasing conductivity of a carbon fiber. Interesting.
Yeah, as you pointed out, that's solely as a in a liquid media. It apparently stabilizes some aspects of the electron in the carbon atom and facilitate more conductivity. It doesn't quite make a lot of sense because you're kind of always looking for something that is by itself conducting. Because I mentioned for solids, they talk about doping it with metals that are conductors. But in this case, perversely, it's something that doesn't strike one as obvious. You know, to give a kind of example where that's not terribly unusual, the great most powerful magnets that we make these days are given that quality by including metals that aren't magnetic. So non-magnetic metals alloyed with ferromagnetic metals give you a stronger ferromagnet. So I guess that's a similar situation. It doesn't really help explaining because it's a real complicated rationale of why it works.
Okay. Coming to the steady state or solid state materials that could increase conductivity of fiber, carbon fiber, silica fume, mostly ferrosilicon that is used is cured for smelting in smelting process for production of anion for the problem with the English. I'm sorry. Okay, maybe I start from different point. Silica fume is a material with spherical particles. It's kind of ultrafine, 1 micrometer diameter, and it makes approximately 100 times smaller than the average cement particle. So we could use that silica fume to increase different materials. Let's say we want to have more conductivity in concrete, so we could use the silica fume for it. But anyhow, it's being found that ferrosilica fume is the material that enormously increased the conductivity of the materials, different materials. When we're talking about conductivity and the electrical resistivity of the materials, the best would be silver. Then we have copper, gold, aluminum, beryllium, magnesium, tungsten, zinc, nickel, iron, platinum. I forgot. That would be tin or lead, something like that. Then titanium and bismuth. I had it memorized before, but silver is too expensive, but copper is quite affordable. Then gold as the next one. Somebody could be very much surprised. So we think about gold as a good conductor, and we use gold for most of the contacts. I had a question for you, why?
I know that one, so this is maybe.
Okay, Ed, tell him why.
Copper and silver will use an incorrect term, rust. They will oxidize. The Statue of Liberty is copper, and the green is a coating of the copper equivalent of rust. Silver tarnishes. That's the silver equivalent of rust. Gold has no such problem. Gold will not oxidize, tarnish, rust, what have you. So if you have a relay with contact, like, for example, one classic case, airbag, some kind of a mechanical bridge arrangement that acceleration slows the contact, which triggers the airbag, and it has to work after a couple of decades. So they use a gold plating on the contact so it will not rust, so it will tarnish. Now, for high power relays, they actually lose about some of the coin silver contacts, even though they don't use silver many coins anymore. But when the contacts make you break on a high power mechanical relay, you get arcing, and that actually burns off the tarnish. And sometimes you have a relay that can be used for either high power or low power, and the rule is tiny little, you know, millionths of an inch of gold on the contact. Sit out of the box for high power or low power. But once you're high power, you can never go low power because you burned off the gold. Roy, does that, have I been clear? Does that make sense?
Yes, you made a very good presentation of corrosion resistance of gold versus silver or copper. Also, for people who are saving their shekels, I believe that the manufacturers sometimes will tinplate for the same non-corrosive external layer.
Yes, that is very common. I've seen that a lot, also in relay contacts, similar.
Yeah, so again, life is complicated. Ordinarily, you would look up the most conductive material, and that would be that. But the devil is in the details.
But often seen, contacts are plated, they'll specify 50 micro inches of tin, 10 micro inches of gold on top of that. That's a very common.
Okay, I mean, I was looking at the specs of some recent video cards that are causing people problems. They have copper, then they plate that with nickel, and then they plate over the nickel with tin.
Not as good as gold, but still.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Contacts on CW, you know, all the. Yeah, like I have a iambic here. You know, I wonder what the contacts are with that, or you know, even the old straight keys.
That's a special case, but they're constantly being exercised, and that rubs off the smooth.
Yeah, interesting is I purchased the late one of the icons of American technology. Monarch 10, the 10WA. One of the relay had a contact, 50 grams of gold contact, 0.50. And now they don't even want to put a tiny, tiny layer of gold. And tertiary.
Well, gold has gotten pricier and pricier over time, you know. Gold is that. There's other things. I think people use all kinds of esoteric, non-corrosive metals in some Morse code keys. I have this vague memory of things like palladium, possibly. I'd have to look it up, though. It's been a while since I read specs of high-end, you know, where everything's chrome, gold-plated. You know, it's a Morse code porn, almost.
1980s, and they just keep us, yeah, they keep on going.
I think the chrome and key is just for low. Chrome and rifle bound.
WKTJ with a tech question.
Yes, what's your question?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, gentlemen. It was brought to my attention, and I never heard of this, on a vertical antenna, such as Antron or a IMX-2000, for example, the radiation pattern, does it transmit from the tip of the antenna and receive at the lower of the base antenna, or does it radiate throughout the whole top to bottom and receive throughout the whole structure?
Okay, what's your first name, by the way?
John.
Okay, John. So the two models you mentioned, if memory serves me, they're half-wave handsets. So they don't really have the need for radio wires. Is that correct?
No. You have an option of a ground. main attachment accessory, but it comes without one.
Yeah, so it's kind of optional because the design doesn't inherently need it. They're half-wave end sets. In other words, the length is half of the wavelength of your receiving transmitting. Half-wave end sets have very interesting radiation models. Their current maximum is in the middle of the antenna. Their voltage maximums are at the end, either ends of the antenna. So most of the receiving and transmitting is closer to the middle of the antenna, although you can't say that there's nothing going on at the edges. It's just much more important in the middle.
Okay, thank you for that response. Good evening, gentlemen. WK2J.
Yes, Ed.
I was absolutely fascinated by the concept that somebody said that radiates from the top and receives the bottom. All my years of this stuff, that one has never occurred to me in my wildest nightmare. I do not have any idea where that could have originated.
Well, I could understand if you're unfamiliar with current voltage curves of antennas, where you might think that there is some kind of preference in one portion or the other. Most people don't really think in terms of where their current maximums are. In center-fed, hopefully most people know that the current maximum is in the center of the dipole, and the voltage maximums are at the edge. I don't think a lot of people would know that an MFED half-wave has the same similar distribution of current and voltage because the feed point is at the end. So I think a lot of people would guess that the maximum current would simply go where the feed point went, which isn't the case, at least for a half-wave. I've modeled it using antenna simulation software. I've written an article, and hopefully next month ELOG will have that article kind of demonstrating the whole concept of how an NFED half-wave operates.
Boy, I had an interesting conversation on the latest subject.
Let me go for that.
Well, Wesley, if you want to, you can go further. Ed wants to tell us about something related to the guy who came by, but, you know, I leave it up to you whether you want to give Ed the leeway.
No, it's interesting what you're commenting in terms of the antenna. I just have a few other things to discuss for the space report.
Okay, I'm sure Ed will be short. We have at the very least 10, 15 minutes. We can go a little bit extra.
All right. The fellow on the repeater on this question, he has two antennas, and one of which is a standard protocol with a radio, and the other one is an antenna that's no radio antenna. He says the one with radios better when you switch antennas from one to the other, at least on receive. But they both have an excellent SWR, sorry. But the only thing I could think of was that the wording of the literature on that antenna don't need radio. So in other words, you can get a good SWR without radio. But that does not define the pattern. And if you want to use a vertical antenna on the low band, and the pattern is very important to getting proper ionospheric shift. And without any proof, just a wild guess, I threw out it could be that you use the radio to get the proper launch angle of the thing, where with this antenna, you get what you get, and you have no control over it whatsoever, and it's probably not optimized. Just wondering, it's germane to the discussion, I'm wondering what you think.
Okay, by the way, AC2CS. That's an interesting possibility. The surprising thing that I discovered about NFED half-waves is that they're really not NFED. They're almost NFED. There is a physical kind of characteristic that acts like a little stub at the very end that extends beyond it. And if it doesn't, then your antenna will grab your coaxial cable in common mode and force it to be not quite NFED. So it depends upon what they mean by it should work with or without a radio.